Good morning. It's 8:04. This is KUNM. I'm Elaine Baumgartel, and this is the KUNM Call-In Show. What would you pay more for or give up in order to support conservation of land, air, and water? In our current economic climate, is conservation a priority for you? On the KUNM Call-In Show today, we'll host a conversation and take your calls on attitudes about conservation. Recent polls show some surprising results about the perspectives of Hispanics and Latinos in New Mexico and young people. You can email callinshow@kunm.org with your comments, and you can join us live by phone. The number to call in Albuquerque is 277-5866. You can also call us toll-free, 877-899-5866. Here to discuss attitudes about conservation this morning, Patrick McCarthy. He's the Director of Conservation Programs with the New Mexico Chapter of the Nature Conservancy. Karen Cowan is Executive Director of the New Mexico Cattle Growers Association, and Arturo Sandoval is Executive Director of the Latino Sustainability Institute. Good morning to you all. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Good morning.
Let's start off, Patrick. I'd like to talk to you first. We heard from Representative Heinrich a little bit earlier this morning. I did an interview with him about this new urban wildlife refuge that's planned for the South Valley. And he talked a bit about the challenge of getting kids away from their video games and away from the TV and out into nature. The Nature Conservancy has recently released a poll of what kids think about the environment and their ability to care about and connect with nature. It seems they're not oblivious. What are some of the things that keep kids from going outside besides computers and TVs?
Well, Elaine, that's right on about computers and TVs. First, the poll found that 88% of kids, America's youth, are spending time online every day. Only about 11% reported regularly spending time outside every day. And that's the very issue that Congressman Heinrich talked about this morning and that we need to address. And what's keeping kids outside? Well, that's where things are. What's keeping kids from going outside? Well, that's what the poll looked into in a little bit more detail. And mostly it has to do with the fact that they and their families and their friends are not drawn to spending time outdoors. They find that the pull of those screens is very strong. They're finding that especially urban populations, that they're actually uncomfortable about going outside. They are afraid of being bullied. They're afraid of feeling out of place. Obesity is also an issue. They're concerned about gangs and crime. So there are all kinds of things that are keeping kids from getting outside, including, in general, lack of access. So four in five of American youth are saying that the discomfort is keeping them inside. But they're just not able to get access and relax and find easy ways to get outside in nature.
And so with these poll results, what does that indicate to you and the Nature Conservancy for your conservation programs? What is the plan, so to speak?
Yeah.
What's a plan, Patrick, to get kids outside?
Yeah, well, one thing that we can do, of course, is help establish these safe, friendly, accessible environments, especially for urban kids. And our world is becoming much more urban, of course. Places like this urban wildlife refuge that the Fish and Wildlife Service and others are working so hard to bring about right now. But for us, and the reason we commissioned this poll is to determine how we can help empower the next generation of environmental leaders. How can we bring about this conservation ethic? And I think the single most important finding of the poll is that spending quality time outdoors is absolutely paramount for building a strong conservation ethic. In fact, we found that of the kids who had a personal experience in nature that really helped them feel a connection, they were twice as likely to view themselves as strong environmentalists. And they were much more likely to express concern about things like water pollution, air pollution, global warming, and the condition of the environment. So in short, it's telling us that we need to go about fostering this connection between people and nature, and through personal experiences in nature as often as possible.
Arturo, I'd like to go to you next. In this poll that you conducted with the Latino Sustainability Institute, what are some of the assumptions that are often made about Hispanics and Latinos and how they view conservation issues?
Well, basically, I think the common stereotype is that Latinos just basically don't have an ethic for conservation values, that we have other issues that are much more important to us, such as education and jobs, and that often we place jobs above anything that is tied to conservation. And what our poll shows is that's absolutely not true, and that, in fact, in New Mexico, Latino voters strongly favor conservation, and they're very concerned about a lot of critical issues. So we did a statewide poll. We had a 600 sample. It's about a 4.4% margin of error. But what it shows overwhelmingly is that Latinos in New Mexico have a very strong conservation ethic. They have a real deep tie to place and to land here, which is not often the case in larger urban areas. But in New Mexico, we have a long history of Latinos in a personal relationship with this special place we call New Mexico. And the poll shows that, and it shows that we have those deep conservation values.
We've heard a lot about federal funding, the federal budget, crisis in funding for federal programs. Talk to me about what your poll found with respect to federal funding for conservation programs for national monuments.
We were specifically looking at a couple of programs. One is the Land and Water Conservation Fund that's paid for by royalties that oil companies pay for offshore drilling. And the poll shows that Latinos had a really high support for continuing the Land and Water Conservation Fund. And that support was really overwhelming. It was 73% that strongly supported it or very close to strongly, and only 19% that were opposed. So that's a huge difference. That's a 64-point spread for Latinos who want to continue programs like that. The other specific program we looked at were national monuments. And once we talked them through exactly what national monuments are in a very neutral way, the support for that was also very overwhelming. So it was just amazing. It cuts across. So national monuments, for example, was a 23-point positive spread. So 58% of Latino voters in New Mexico favor the president creating new national monuments, and we have wonderful national monuments here in New Mexico.
All these slides, we're looking at some of the PowerPoint slides that you put together to present the results. These are all on your website, right? The latinosustainability.org website, if listeners want to pull up those slides and see some of the images. Karen, I want to come to you now. With your constituents in the Cattle Growers Association here in New Mexico, what do you see as assumptions about ranching communities and cattle growing communities in New Mexico with respect to conservation? What are some of the assumptions that are made?
I think that we can, I can agree a lot with the things that have been said by the two previous speakers. It is imperative to have youth involved in conservation in the environment, and that's what we've raised our families to do over generations. If we don't take care of the land, if we don't appreciate the land and the water and the wildlife, they're not going to be there for the next generation. We've been working on some centennial stuff for next year, and it's amazing to me the number of ranches in New Mexico that have been in one family for 100 years.
You put out a call for ranches have been in families for over 100 years as part of this.
The number of people that I've had respond are not the ones I thought. I mean, there's just a bunch of those ranches out there that I didn't even know about. We've never found that the Hispanic or Latino folks among us didn't have a strong tie to the land and a strong tie to conservation. I think we do disagree about whether the federal government should be paying for all of this, because that takes away your right to participate and make decisions. And the national monuments, our members, regardless of background, have serious problems with, because they don't often allow hunting and fishing and those sorts of things. And I think that, you know, that's people want to be able to use the land, and when it's set aside and can't be used, it doesn't matter who you are, race, color, or creed, you don't like that.
Let me add something to that. Actually, I was looking at your website, Karen, and I noticed that there was a juxtaposition between a lot of links to Fox News and to sort of right-wing sites. And at the same time, your mission statement talks about a free enterprise system and sort of reflects what you just said now on the air. But I also see that on your website are numerous links to federal programs where you try to urge your members to seek federal help. So that seems like you're saying one thing, but you're doing another.
I don't know that we're urging people to seek federal help. What we're doing is saying it's available, and if you need it, here's one place for it. And those are not, those are programs to help people stay in business. And it doesn't, again, race, color, and creed doesn't play into that. If you need the help, you need the help. But to have the federal government funding things like monuments, endangered species, those sorts of things, you look at Rio Riba County and many of the resolutions they've passed, you know, there's a pushback.
We're talking about conservation today on the KUNM Call-In Show. If you'd like to join the conversation, the number to call is 277-5866 here in the Albuquerque area. You can call toll-free 877-899-5866. You can also email us your comments, and we'll try to get them on during the show. That email address is callinshow@kunm.org. Patrick, you had a comment?
Yeah, I just wanted to say that regardless of land ownership and political perspective, I think the common thread that's running through what we're all thinking and saying is that as we see these connections between youth and the environment, between people and nature start to fray a little bit because of urbanization of our populations, because of kids not getting enough time outside, these connections with long-term connections with the land, the traditional connections being lost, what we need to be concerned about is rebuilding those connections, because regardless of our perspectives right now, it's our kids and their kids who are going to be taking leadership in a generation or two from now. And we've got to do everything we can to foster those kinds of connections so that they can continue to build conservation programs, whether they are in fact federally sponsored or state sponsored or on private lands. We all need to get behind conservation.
Let's take a few calls. Let's go to Glenn in Jemez Springs. Good morning, Glenn. You're on the air.
Good morning. Thanks for having this. My mother just died. She was 95, and she was a child of the Great Depression, taught me a lot of things about conservation. And I guess one of the things I would like to mention first before I mention a second is how she taught that wearing used clothing that we could buy at thrift stores was an okay thing. And I've been doing that personally for 20 years and have taught my children and still go to a favorite place near Manila and Carlisle in Albuquerque. Secondly, four of us went hiking yesterday up here in the beautiful Jemez, about the most perfect day we could ever have had. But we took plastic bags with us, and for 2 hours out on trails away from everything, all of the trash that people throw out, we filled up the entire back end of Chris's car with huge bags. I would really like to invite folks in the listening area to pass the word, please take care of our forest, conserve what we have, and stop and pick up trash when you see it. Thanks.
Glenn, thanks for your call. Let's take another call. Kelly in Albuquerque. Good morning. You're on the air.
I was also calling in about the littering problem in New Mexico. I think that you can really tell when you cross the border into New Mexico because there's so much garbage everywhere. And that's something that makes it, you know, not as pleasant to take a walk. I like to walk on the ditches because I live in the South Valley, and they are so littered. And some of it's more industrial things. You can find air conditioners in the ditch, tires. It's really gross. And I think that that's something that needs to be addressed for conservancy issues. They need to get out and clean the ditches in the winter before they add water in the spring. And also getting into the schools and talking with the kids about littering and trying to turn it around and, you know, take some pride in where we live and make it a nice place to be outside. a lot of the garbage that I find in my neighborhood and clean up on my street is from people who are drinking and driving. And that's another issue, but when I go outside and clean up garbage on my street, of it, 90% of the litter is alcohol containers.
Great, Kelly. Thanks a lot for your call. Karen, I wanted to follow up with you on this question of kind of how people show that they care about the land. And I think sometimes there is this assumption that ranchers and cattle growers are opposed to environmental programs or advocating environmental things. And yet ranchers and cattle growers have such an intricate relationship with land and natural resources. Can you talk a little bit about that kind of dichotomy about being
ranchers are the first environmentalists, and some of the dichotomy that I think you that you see is from attacks for from organizations that want to drive us from the land. If, as I said earlier, if we don't conserve our land, if we don't appreciate what we have, it's not going to last the four or five generations, the hundreds of years that it's passed down from generation to generation. So conservation and environmentalism is something that we do every day without even thinking about it. I mean, if you don't take care of things, be it your land, your animals, they're not going to be there to, for you or anyone else to enjoy. And I totally agree with the calls on trash. I mean, that's one of the really sad things, particularly if ranchers have places that are close to urban communities, because there's just no appreciation whatsoever for, you know, who has to pick that trash up, who has to take care of it. You know, the folks that live, you know, around Albuquerque and Santa Fe, you'll find refrigerators and stoves and, you know, you name it, people take it out and dump it because people don't seem to understand that somebody owns that land. And if that somebody may be the federal government and therefore it's yours, you need to take care of it like it's yours. I often use, when we talk about public versus private and care of things, you know, do you want to go to a public restroom or do you go to a private restroom if you have a choice? And we take better care of things when it's ours to take care of.
So let me ask you about that, because I know that the relationship between state, federal, and private land when it comes to ranching in New Mexico is really kind of complicated, mm-hmm. the way that different ranches use different combinations of land in their practices and with their cattle, and that there is this situation where if it's not yours, maybe you don't take as much care of it as you would if it was yours. How does this play out in the context of ranchers in New Mexico using state and federal land as opposed to privately owned land?
Well, most ranchers have a combination of private, state, and federal. And in a lot of places, there aren't even fences between what is state and private. With the federal land, there's more fencing. But basically, it's yours to take care of. It just because the deed says the state owns it or that the federal government owns it doesn't mean that you have any less responsibility to care for it. And the ranches are usually a patchwork. It's not that there's a strip of each kind of land that you can delineate and treat individually if you wanted to. It's checkerboarded, and you have the responsibility for taking care of all of it.
Arturo, your poll looked at what Hispanic ranchers and people who have ranchers in their families think about federal management of land. Talk to me about your poll results.
Well, yes, I was interested in knowing, and we were interested in knowing, how do Latino ranchers and farmers feel about grazing on public land? So we asked that question, and overall, here in New Mexico, Latinos said that they supported regulations that place limits on how much cattle grazing can be done on public lands in order to protect the land from overuse. So overall, statewide, that was 54% favor regulations that would protect the land from overuse and cattle grazing, 34% opposed. Then we pulled out those people that identified as ranchers and farmers, Latino ranchers and farmers, and asked them the same question. And their response was 56% of them, of Latino farmers and ranchers, said they would support regulations to protect the land from overuse, and 39% were opposed. So those were astounding results. And that, in a way, that echoes what you were saying, Karen, that there is a real connection to place, and that they do see their use of public lands as an important part of their responsibility. I want to add, however, that public lands and the way they've been designated, forests and national monuments and all that, do not belong to individuals. They belong to all Americans. And we have to always keep track of that we have a commitment to the next generation, to our grandchildren, and that those lands first and foremost must be managed for all Americans.
This is the KUNM Call-In Show. We're speaking with Karen Cowan. She is the executive director of the New Mexico Cattle Growers Association. Also joining us in the studio, Arturo Sandoval. He is the executive director of the Latino Sustainability Institute. And Patrick McCarthy. He's the director of conservation programs with the New Mexico chapter of the Nature Conservancy. We're going to take a quick break. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a call, 277-5866 here in Albuquerque. You can call toll-free 877-899-5866, or you can shoot us an email, callinshow@kunm.org. I'm Elaine Baumgartel. We'll be right back.
Support comes from Saggio's, homemade real Italian pizza, calzones, pasta, salads, and desserts, serving Albuquerque and the UNM community since 1968. Saggio's encourages support of public radio KUNM on Cornell Southeast across from UNM and at saggios.com.
KUNM programming is supported by the law firm of Rothstein, Donatelli, Hughes, Dahlstrom, Schoenberg, and Bienvenue, with offices in Santa Fe, Albuquerque, and Phoenix since 1976. For information, rothsteinlaw.com.
It's not too late. Half of the iTunes cards are still unclaimed. So if you received our mailing in early September, check yes, send me my 24 free iTunes songs, and return your response card with a donation in any amount. Reserve your very own limited edition t-shirt if you can. You can see it in full color at KUNM.org, and if you didn't get a mailing, you can also donate online. Just click Support KUNM, and thanks.
I'm Elaine Baumgartel. This is the KUNM Call-In Show. We're talking about attitudes about conservation this morning. You can join the conversation 277-5866 or shoot us an email, callinshow@kunm.org. Colin has sent an email. He says that he takes an issue with the loss of ponderosa pine forests and the idea that with climate change, there's nothing we can do. He wonders, is there a culture of environmental defeatism that just throws up its hands and says, we're already going down the creek with Patrick. I'm wondering what your poll found with respect to young people and how they view. Is there defeatism showing up in your poll with the young people?
Yeah, well, a couple of points I want to make in response to Colin's email. And first is that we're finding in our work in the Jemez Mountains and down in the Gila and elsewhere that in spite of these megafires, the likes of which we haven't seen before.
The Las Conchas fire here in New Mexico.
Las Conchas fire, which is the largest ever in New Mexico's history and more severe than any fire that we've ever seen. There is hope for restoring and protecting these ponderosa pine forests at a large scale. With the right kind of commitment, the right kind of engagement, the right kind of science, we can get it right. We can do that. With respect to the perspective of youth, in fact, we found some kind of surprising results that, in fact, this was a bit of a wake-up call for us. Today's youth simply don't believe we're doing enough to address the mounting challenges facing the environment. Nearly three-quarters say that previous generations have damaged our environment and left it to our generation to fix it. So this is pretty daunting, and it's a little bit of a sort of a chastisement to our generation and preceding generations. And only a third of our youth believe that government leaders are doing a good job addressing major problems facing our country. In fact, they have a point, because over the past 30 years, the entire government has grown over 130%. But in comparison, federal spending on all conservation programs grew only 2% over the entire period, and our natural resource spending is just 1% of the federal budget. So what we're seeing is these youth are saying, look, we're committed. We want to do more. Let's get to it right now.
There, we have an email from Katie who says that her kids don't know how to clean a kitchen because they have a choice of either cleaning or mandatory outside time. I guess that's a way to never have your dishes done. Arturo, a quick comment from you, then I'll go to you, Karen, and then I'd like to go back to callers.
I just wanted to add on the youth comment that in our poll it showed that Latino voters under 40 had a much higher commitment to conservation issues than those over 40. And I think that's a really good trend and something we can build on for the future. So I just wanted to add to your comments.
And Patrick. Karen, your comments about youth and defeatism.
I think back to Colin's original, are we fighting a losing battle here? We're absolutely not. I agree with the poll that our federal government hasn't been managing things as they should. And that's a lot of gridlock because of litigation, and we've got to figure out some way to get past that. But, you know, going back to the mid-90s when I really began to work hard on these issues, there was a professor from Northern Arizona University that pointed out that in 1995, the overgrowth in the forest was comparable to parking 30 oil tankers and setting them on fire. And then as we kind of looked in the early 2000s, we had some big fires. The Scott Abel fire was 60,000 acres in Lincoln County, and people thought that was a huge fire. Well, then we come 10 years later, and we've done nothing. We've done absolutely nothing to care for our forests. And as our young people, you know, spend the time on the TV and the computer and they watch these huge fires and, you know, and they see the devastation, they're absolutely right. And hopefully they'll be part of the solution as we get the government to reasonably manage and responsibly manage.
Let's go to some callers. Stephen in Albuquerque. Good morning, Stephen. You're on the air.
Good morning. How are you?
Just fine, thanks.
Thanks for taking my call. Yeah, this is a great discussion. I think it's bringing up a lot of interesting issues. I think there really is a patchwork of so many different, private and public and semi-public and all of that. The original reason for my call was that I think Karen had some really good points about what ranchers can do, and that they are taking care of the land. Although I did take issue with her comment about national monuments. I mean, yes, there are issues, but when we have something that is part of our collective ownership, there can be issues and problems, but I really think that we need to look at areas both on the conservation of wildlife and certain special areas of land that do need to be taken over by a public entity. The public bathroom versus private bathroom comment, too, that was very good. I thought that was right on. But there are, again, exceptions to that. I think we do take better care of things when we own them ourselves. But I can tell you a story of a mechanic worked on cars for a long, long time. He owned his land down in southern rural New Mexico. And for 20 years, he dumped all of his used motor oil on the ground. He owned that land, but he's like, oh, well, just go out somewhere in the bush and just dump this stuff. We cannot always expect people who own the land themselves to be good stewards.
Great, Stephen. Thanks for your call. Let's take another caller, Clifton in Albuquerque. Good morning, Clifton. You're on the air.
Well, good morning. Stephen stole all my thunder. That's exactly the point. You have a wonderful discussion, and you're bringing up a wide variety of points of view, which, to my mind, is precisely why government needs to be involved. We cannot count on individual owners to know what's best for everyone, and it's been shown that we cannot count on individuals to take into consideration the next several generations. A whole lot of the arroyos and the erosion issues that we face in the Southwest come from overgrazing.
Thanks a lot for your call, Clifton. I want to take one more caller, and then we'll go back to our panel. Lisa in Albuquerque, good morning. You're on the air.
Hi. We have a state where traditionally we have had large organizations bring in animals to graze. Contract grazing was common in the early part of our state's history and as it was a territory and early statehood. I don't think a lot of people realize that in the early 1900s, there was grass belly deep to a horse up on the Navajo Reservation. That's completely gone because of, overused contract grazing and the fact that our climate has been changing. But one of the things that I've noticed is that there are sustainable ways of ranching, and the ranchers who do ranch sustainably spend more time on their ranch, even if they live in the city, they go out on weekends and they rotate their cattle to different pastures. They do have fences so that they can fence off areas so that that grass can recover. And when you go out and watch their cattle eat and lay down and rest. In most parts where the graze is not good enough, where they have overgrazed, the cattle have to eat constantly because they can't get enough calories because the grass is so poor. I think that there are a lot of ranchers who they lease property and they graze it for the time of their lease, and they don't care about who comes after them because they're not intending to continue that lease, you know, down the road. And so we need to really look at sustainable ranching as opposed to, you know, what essentially is contract grazing.
Karen, what about this idea of sustainable ranching? And I'm also, my mind, of course, goes to our current economic climate and how so many industries are struggling. People are cutting corners in order to make ends meet. Is that something that is going on for ranchers in New Mexico? Are people having to push a little harder on the landscape?
I'm not saying that every rancher in the country is perfect, just like every radio station is not perfect or anything. I mean, there is a bad apple in every crate of apples. But a lot, and it's true that there was a lot of contract grazing, or, you know, big massive herds that came into the West at the turn of the century. And those people came here without understanding the fragile and brittle nature of this environment. They came from places where you got 60, 70 inches of rain a year and it would grow, you know, the grass would grow back. So, you know, there's no denying that there was damage done at that point in time. But that has changed dramatically. Most of the folks on our ranches, kids, are, you know, we're second and third generation college graduates, lots of master's degrees. You know, nobody's perfect and we learn as we go. But the thing that I've seen through this economy is that we're cutting back on livestock. Right? You know, you're not going to harm the land. You're going to sell the livestock. And I don't think that you can divorce economics from the conservation discussion, because if you can't afford to take care of something, you're not going to. And if a county doesn't have a tax base, it can't function. And so, you know, having livestock and viable family ranching operations in counties is just critical. Rio Riba County is a prime example. I mean, they're at war with the federal government over trying to cut grazing in Rio Riba County. The other thing that I don't think most people take into consideration is the stocking rates that are necessary in land like New Mexico. I was in Florida a couple of months ago, and they run two cows to the acre. In New Mexico, you're going to run one cow to 60 to 120 acres, depending on the terrain and the environment. So it's not that the grazing is so bad. This is the fragile, brittle nature of where we live.
Well, I think there's the economic argument is really important when we talk about our public landscapes, because outdoor recreation is one of our largest industries, probably generating somewhere between $8 and $9 billion per year, which I think eclipses cattle growing. The other issue is that because of that, we desperately need to understand that grazing cattle is not the highest and best use of our public lands. It has to be a multiple use by multiple interests, and outdoor recreation is a huge part of it. And 50% of the Latino voters we polled had gone hunting or fishing in the past year. So there's a real tie to the place. But outdoor recreation, hunting, camping is a huge industry in the state, and we have to continue to nurture it. And I think it's the second highest source of income for New Mexico.
Patrick?
Yeah, I just wanted to build on those two points by saying that in tough times, Americans kind of rediscover their core values. And I think what's emerging in the past few years as we've gotten into the Great Recession is we're seeing more of a collaborative approach across public and private sectors, as exemplified by organizations like the Malpai Borderlands Group. I'm going to call them out. The Kivera Coalition, and programs like the Collaborative Forest Landscape Restoration Program, which was created in part by Senator Bingaman, which bring people together to build on these shared values and to engage in a dialogue about what is it we want to conserve that's part of the public trust? What is it that we need to develop economic activity around in a sustainable way? And another great experiment with this is an innovative project called the Santa Fe Water Source Protection Fund, which involves public-private partnerships for conservation.
Patrick, I want to come back to the water fund in just a minute. I want to take a few callers, and let's go to Ernie in La Jara. Good morning, Ernie. You're on the air.
Yeah, can you hear me?
I sure can.
I'm kind of in a remote area. I want to speak to some of the things that Mr. Sandoval said on the statistics he's coming up with. In my area, there's several acequias. There's probably 10 or 11 acequias. If you were to take a poll of how much support these water right holders have as far as more new monuments or more federal influence on our area, you probably have 99% of the people saying that the federal government doesn't help us, it hurts us. All the restrictions that have come down from the Endangered Species Act, now the clean water stuff that's coming down, does nothing for our land-based economies. In fact, if you were to look at, and I just heard Mr. Sandoval talk about recreation, eclipsing cattle ranching. Now, in our area, it doesn't. In fact, cattle ranching supports an elk herd of thousands of animals here because they're coming down on private property right now and getting fat on our cultivated fields. I think when you start looking at statistics, you need to really look at the impact of the populations around, Hispanic populations around these land-based economies. We have our own nation here, and the federal government's our enemy, and that's pretty much the gist of what I want to say. Thanks.
Great, Ernie. Thanks for your call. We're going to take one more caller. Let's go to Glenn in Ponderosa. Good morning, Glenn. You're on the air.
Good morning. Thanks for this conversation. I think it's enjoyable and informative. I want to emphasize some of the points that have just been made by all of your panel members, and that is that you cannot separate the economy from the environment or politics from the environment or any of these other things. They all exist within the context of the environment, and if we're not conserving that environment, none of these other things, are like the economy, are really going to matter. And I'll leave it there. Thank you for your time.
Great. Thanks a lot for your call, Glenn. Malia in Albuquerque, good morning. Or maybe it's Malia.
Good morning.
Good morning.
This is a great forum, and it's wonderful to hear all these people that are really concerned about all the different aspects of this issue. Mr. Sandoval, actually two callers ago, that caller made some great points about, for instance, grazing on the Navajo Reservation.
The grass belly high to a horse.
Yes,
was the image.
And how it is now gone. I do a lot of hiking in the El Malpais Wilderness Area, which is BLM land, and, of course, with a ranger. And it is very obvious out there as well, and it's very fragile out there, very fragile ecosystem, that the scrub pine are taking over out there because the grass, which has always been the dominant species, has been public grazed pretty much into extinction. There are small patches of grass. In the years when the rains are really good, there are still some blue grama fields, but they have been grazed down to almost nothing. I believe that whatever has been happening on private ranches has not perhaps been reproduced on the public lands. I'd like to know if Our Lady with the Cattle Commission, and I'm sorry, I don't remember her name.
Her name is Karen Cowan. She's with the New Mexico Cattle Growers Association.
Okay, so I'd like to know if Karen knows what currently the per animal fee for public grazing is, because it used to be 50 cents per animal for the whole season. And I would really like for the public to understand that it's dirt cheap to graze your cattle on public lands. This is an old thing that's come back, you know, since the 18th century. This whole free grazing thing gives cattlemen a license to, if they're going to do it, which evidently many do, grossly overgraze these lands that belong to the taxpayers. And if they don't own the land, they don't have any incentive to take care of it. As Mr. Sandoval said, camping and outdoor activities are a great deal of our income in this state. You can't camp out there. There's cow dung everywhere.
Great, Malia. I'm gonna stop you right there and
sure.
take another call. Thanks so much for your comments
sure.
this morning. I'm going to take a call. We'll take a quick break, and then we'll come back to panelists on some of the points that callers have made. David in Tome, you're on the air.
Yes, I just have a couple of quick comments. Number one is, of course, the land, public land, belongs to all of us, and we've taken it very seriously to make it a part of our life. But the second thing I think is most important, the hay areas down around where I live in Somme, the alfalfa areas and the hay areas that provide food in the wintertime for many of these cattle are being overtaken by developers and, you know, building homes. And the private sector does not really care much about the alfalfa because it's not really a money-making crop for them. So I'd like to leave that as a comment, and maybe you can get to it later. Thank you.
Thanks for your call, David. You're listening to the KUNM Call-In Show. The number to call to participate in the conversation is 277-5866 in the Albuquerque area. You can also call toll-free 877-899-5866, or you can send us an email to callinshow@kunm.org. Karen Cowan is with us in the studio this morning. She is the executive director of the New Mexico Cattle Growers Association. Arturo Sandoval is the executive director of the Latino Sustainability Institute. And Patrick McCarthy is the director of conservation programs with the New Mexico chapter of the Nature Conservancy. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with some responses from our panelists to some of your questions.
Experience Bosque School, where students in grades 6 through 12 are challenged to rigorous academics and inspired by the arts, service learning, and the environment. Bosque School is holding an open house on Sunday, October 16th at 2 p.m. There will be tours and information about the Bosque student experience. Visit bosqueschool.org for more information. Bosque School, begin, believe, become. A message from the tax-exempt Bosque School.
The Moab Folk Festival is wishing KUNM a happy 45th birthday by donating 3 pair of full festival passes to encourage you to donate at our website, kunm.org. 3 winners will be chosen from all who register on our secure donation form. The festival features Cheryl Wheeler, Steve Forbert, Farron, Kate McLeod, Boris McCutcheon, and many more folk luminaries. Click Support KUNM at kunm.org.
This is the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Elaine Baumgartel. We're talking about attitudes, about conservation this morning here on the show, and we have full lines at this moment. But I'm going to go to panelists right now. We had a bunch of callers who had comments about ranching practices in New Mexico, the history of overgrazing in New Mexico. Karen, what are your thoughts, and what are ranchers doing now to ameliorate or to try to bring land back to some of the higher grade grazing conditions that may have existed prior to this history of overgrazing that you mentioned earlier?
I think that the stewardship that I talked about, you know, the college education, we're working to learn all the time. Everything anyone does every day is a learning experience. But there are a lot of misconceptions that have been mentioned in the last few minutes. Grazing is not the highest best use on federal land or state land. It is part of multiple use. And there's a lot of misunderstanding about state land versus federal land. Federal land, the Forest Service lands and the Bureau of Land Management lands, are multiple-use lands. You can use them for recreation. They're used for grazing. They're used for mining. They're used for timber. And when you, to the lady's question, the rate for grazing is $1.35 per animal unit, which is a cow and calf per month. So that's times 12. And yes, that is a little less than what you would get private grazing for. However, you're accepting all of the responsibility on federal land. You have to own the water. You have to maintain the water. You have to maintain the fences. You're accepting predator losses. You're in charge of all the management. When you're on private land, a lot of those amenities, if you will, are included in your lease cost. On state land, you are a grazing lessee, and part of the contract that you sign is to accept responsibility for caring for that land, because the state land office does not have the staff to do the policing. So only unless you have a permit from the state land office or a hunting license from the game department, you are not allowed on state land. And it is a grazing lessee who is supposed to police that. As to, you know, overgrazing and hammering the land, there is a really big system within the federal government with the BLM and the Forest Service of permits that you get a grazing permit every 10 years. You have an annual operating plan. You work closely with federal land management agencies. You know, people just can't go do as they please like they do when they dump trash or hunt even.
Arturo?
Well, that's one of the big issues, and it's the elephant in the room when we talk about our national public lands and even state lands, but let's focus on federal, and that is that there's absolutely almost no law enforcement present. So you have Santa Fe National Forest, several million acres. There may be a total of five law enforcement officers for 3 million acres. It's a joke. And so what's happening is, as we have these discussions about how we do multiple use and what are the best uses of our public lands, that 10% of Americans that are scofflaws and who don't care about anything about themselves are out cutting down our forests, trashing our forests, cutting fences, chasing cows, shooting holes in water tanks, and they're basically destroying the resource from under all of us that are involved in public lands and that actually do have some concern. So that's a real issue, and we just have not been able to get the federal government to provide funding over the last 20 or 30 years for adequate law enforcement on all our public lands. That's a real issue I think even the cattlemen would agree with.
Mm-hmm. Patrick?
Yeah, I want to talk about collaborative land stewardship, and earlier, I mentioned that the share of the federal budget going to natural resources conservation is 1%, and it has not kept pace at all with other expenditures in the federal government. I just want to build on Arturo's point that if we're going to have good management, good stewardship of these landscapes by the public employees who care about these lands and by the private ranchers and other users of these lands, we've got to have a decent level of funding. And we also need commitment and collaboration at particular places, on sites that people care about. It's about that long-term commitment through collaborative work that I mentioned earlier.
Let's take a few more callers. Felipe in Albuquerque. Good morning, Felipe. You're on the air.
Good morning. How are you doing?
I'm just fine, thanks.
Okay, I just wanted to call in to make a couple points. One, I wanted to talk about the youth attitude towards conservation. And I honestly believe that it's far better for us than it is for older people. I think kids today are more concerned with the environment than older people are. There's a pervasive attitude that baby boomers have sort of ruined the environment, which is something I think Colin talked about in his poll. And another thing, as far as conservation goes, we grew up in an era of technology, so we think, or a lot of people that I've spoken with anyway, think that any sort of problems we have with conservation or with the environment are things that we're going to be able to solve through technology and through just the basic innovation. So it's sort of, that's all I wanted to say.
Great. Thanks, Felipe. Let's take another call. Dave in Albuquerque. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning, Elaine. I want to thank you for a great show and to all your panelists. I think it's a great panel, and there's room for all of these voices in our efforts to conserve the environment. I want to make one point and ask one question. I think it's true also that with these things like state with monuments and protected areas on public lands, that these lead to tremendous economic engines for New Mexico and jobs. And I think we can always use more outstanding protected areas in our state, and national monuments are a great way to do it. My question is this: given the importance of youth in our future conservation and the benefits intellectually, cognitively, socially, physically from getting youth outdoors, where is the leadership from entities like our educational schools, the public education department, the state of New Mexico? You know, so many schools, some schools have great success integrating conservation, environmental, and outdoor education programs into their curriculums. But I don't see any leadership, really, frankly, on this from the state level. And these are programs that can work everywhere. I mean, in Catron County, downtown Albuquerque, Santa Fe, it doesn't matter. All kids need to be gotten outdoors and taught to understand the environment. And I'm curious what the panelists' views are on that.
Patrick.
Yeah, I think that's a great question and a great point about getting kids engaged. And we need more leadership at the level of our institutions, whether it's the family institution or schools, to get kids connected using great facilities like the Rio Grande Nature Center and our own Santa Fe Canyon Preserve, for example. So there are new programs out there like our LEAF program, which is building environmental high schools across the country and providing paid internships for as many as 20,000 students. So there are folks out there working on this.
And I would just add that I think the leadership's really not going to come from government or major institutions. I think it's going to come from NGOs and other private groups that really have a commitment to it and that can really act as yeast to make the whole thing change, the whole culture change. And I think the work Nature Conservancy is doing, there's a lot of other groups, is very good. And I hope the New Mexico Cattle Growers Association would also commit to building programs like that, and they probably are.
Oh, we do have those kind of programs. And I think that there are lots of programs out there, 4-H and FFA. I think there's never going to be enough federal money for law enforcement. I mean, we have to accept personal responsibility.
Well, especially in states like New Mexico, exactly, where we have so much public land, right?
Exactly.
Other states might not have the same challenge.
About 60% of New Mexico is publicly owned, state, federal, or, you know, some tribal. So we're going to have to accept the public responsibility. And it's refreshing to know that kids are concerned, because that's where the personal responsibility comes from. I don't want to give away my age, but I remember seeing pictures on television of rivers on fire. So when we talk about being handed down poor environments, I think that the environment is much better than it was 40 years ago. Minus forest management, I guess, so that we don't have these big fires. But it's kids need to take the personal responsibility, and I'm glad to see that they're waking up to that.
Let me bring up a couple more comments. On Sharon wrote in via email and asked whether conservation and job creation are compatible. Another email disagreeing with you, Karen, about national monuments, saying that national monuments allow hunting, grazing, etc. And bring in $54 million a year. I'm not sure the source of that number. And then we also have an email from Bob, who says he would give up hamburgers in order to disallow grazing. What are we saying when we talk about leadership? I've heard you all kind of talk about this idea of leadership in different communities and with different ways of kind of touching on issues of conservation in ways that people can connect to. What does that leadership look like? What actually are the things that you would like to see people doing to demonstrate that kind of leadership? Let's go real quick with these last comments. Patrick.
Leadership for getting people connected to the environment and improving stewardship. First, I want to say that the dichotomy between conservation and job creation is a false one. Mm-hmm. We need a healthy environment to support natural resource-based industries. So I want to get that out of the way quickly. And as far as leadership, I think we're looking at programs like, again, the Collaborative Forest Landscape Restoration Program at the federal level. And at the local level, programs to engage kids through Albuquerque Public Schools, for example, to get them out in the environment at some of these natural areas.
Do the dishes or go outside.
Exactly.
Arturo?
I think the leadership is going to come from non-governmental sources, from private groups that really citizens who just band together, whether it be in their own neighborhood, whether it be in a region. I think the change is coming from there, and I'm very hopeful. This poll, for example, this Latino poll, is very hopeful because it shows that there are deep conservation values among Latinos in New Mexico, and we need to make sure that our elected leaders get that message, and we're working hard to make that happen.
Karen?
I think the leadership comes from the ground up. We've seen movements in Otero County, Catron County, Rio Riba County. People want to take care of themselves. They want to take care of the land. And again, I agree with Arturo that they expect their elected leaders to listen. But it's time for personal responsibility, and it's time for us to take care of our own backyards, if you will.
One more comment via email. Justin says, good conservation should not be confused with preservation. Ranch improvements provide amazing wildlife. And he says, open minds and integration of great ideas is conservation. I'm going to leave it at that for the day.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us this morning. You've been listening to Karen Cowan. She is the executive director of the New Mexico Cattle Growers Association. We are also joined this morning by Arturo Sandoval. He is the executive director of the Latino Sustainability Institute. And Patrick McCarthy, he's director of conservation programs with the New Mexico chapter of the Nature Conservancy. You can find a podcast of this show on our website, KUNM.org. You can email us comments and show topics to callinshow@KUNM.org. Next Thursday morning at 8 on the Call-In Show, we'll take your calls on what makes a protest successful. Occupy Wall Street supporters in Albuquerque were told they could no longer stay overnight on the UNM campus. Meanwhile, unions joined protesters in New York City this week. Is this what a successful protest movement looks like, and how can we tell? We'll host a conversation conversation and take your calls next week, Thursday morning at 8 on The Call-In Show. Thanks to Chloe Volick for engineering this morning, Andy Lyman for call screening, and Michael Hess for producing. I'm Elaine Baumgartel. This is KUNM.